Hello and welcome to the 8th episode of Chasing the Dragonfather, the Crixiest podcast in the universe. Today we have
Anthony O'Reilly.
Right, that was just fucking awesome. It was only a silence of like 5 seconds.
Sorry, I was drinking at the time, sorry.
That's best of excuses, right?
It's always the truest of excuses.
It's the truest of excuses. And we also have Ryan Evans.
Hello, that's me.
And today we're going to talk about how awesome and great Anthony O'Reilly is, and that's why I'm hosting today.
Hooray! Wow. Best topic ever.
Yes. So, Anto, let's just get started straight away. I hear you won some insignificant tournament there on a insignificant Green Island.
Well, the insignificant Green Island part, you know, not terribly untrue. We're small, insignificant, but very welcoming.
I know. I love Ireland.
I played in the Irish Gauntlet last weekend, about a 40-person tournament just outside of Dublin.
Okay.
Short ride from the airport. I'm adding that in because next year we'll be looking to expand, bring in some more people from overseas, and the venue is superb. Two of the four walls in the venue are glass, so it is well lit. It is airy. There is free Wi-Fi. You'll get fed. There's a cheap bar. As far as Dublin goes, anyway.
Nice.
It's a lovely venue. I would highly recommend it. The people who travelled in for it said that it was very easy to get to from the airport. So, lots of positive things for travelling next year. Hint, hint, everybody.
Yeah.
And next year, it won't be clashing with the Iron Moot.
Yeah, I think that's also because next year there won't be an Iron Moot.
We hope to welcome all the Moot refugees, you know, to trigger another Viking invasion of Ireland.
True. Then it's up to the Irish to make sure that it's not really successful, right? I mean, it can be somewhat successful, but not really.
Exactly. We want them to come over, but, you know, not win.
Yes.
Like the last time.
Yeah, that sounds nothing but fair.
I mean, I fully expect that the King in Exile will be coming to take his crown back. Yes. In fact, I'm throwing down the gauntlet right now. You might have seen the photo on the Facebook page. Yoka, come take the crown.
I'm sure he will answer the call. I mean, he's a sweet after all. These guys actually play for, I don't know, the right to shave each other.
Yeah. But see, I'm not at all a beardy man, which means any shave bet would have to be either, I don't know, head or balls.
So you won, I understand.
I did.
So what happened in the first round? You dodged Signar. I
actually got Signar in the first round.
Really?
I did. Against one of our Irish locals.
Okay.
Unfortunately, he made a error in the list selection process, which he quickly realized shortly after deployment. When I started running my things forward, he kind of said out loud, I've made a terrible mistake. And indeed he had.
So explain what happened.
So my three lists for the event were Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet, Coven Dark Host with no Wraith Engine, but double Bane Warriors, and Scar 1 Dark Host. They're my three lists.
Okay.
He dropped Kara Sloan, and I dropped Coven Dark Host.
What were his other two choices?
He had a Haley 2 list, and he had a Striker 2 list.
All right.
I think he reached for Kara, because that might be the caster he was most comfortable with. It was on... Which was the scenario? First round scenario was... Two zones, horizontal, objective, with flags in the other quarters. In the other quarters. No, the horizontal zones. Spread the net.
Okay, yeah.
And so he drops Kara into Coven. I'm feeling pretty good about it already. He wins the roll off and then gives me second turn. At that point, I am almost 100% certain that I've won the game because of the way the terrain was laid out, that I could build a good cloud wall and keep my caster safe forever. There was a good forest as well to hide them behind, which was important against Kara. And essentially, I ran forward, feeded on turn two. There was...
On turn two?
Or...
Not on turn one.
Sorry, feeded turn one. I went second, feeded turn one.
Okay.
There was obviously nothing he could do to do any damage, and my models threatened every scenario element. So I immediately scored 4 points. Then he fired his whole army at my army and killed most of the Bane Riders And then I scored 4 more points. Because, well, yeah, it's just not that difficult to do it. With Coven.
Stretanet is a horrible, horrible scenario. I mean, for Krix it's great, but to play against, it's horrible.
Yep.
Yeah.
Winning the first game 8-1, or 8-0, very quickly, like, put me onto the fact that I knew academically that SR 2017 was very, very fast, but even I was surprised by how fast that was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, had I been more careful with positioning an Arc Node, and had it in, I moved it quickly without looking too much at it, and I didn't put it in the zone properly, and didn't announce that it was supposed to be towing the zone, so I didn't press the issue that I planned on doing it when I noticed later on. Otherwise, I would have scored 1 point on my own zone, and then scored 4 the next turn and just won 5-0 without making more than a handful of attack.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Coven Dark Hosts going second, really, really good. Obviously, Kara Sloan wasn't the right drop into it, as Connor realised. So that round went very quickly. Second round, I got... Who was second and who was third? I think second round was Adam Fox from Northern Ireland playing Scorn.
Mm-hmm.
The ever well-dressed and always charming Adam Fox.
Okay.
He was the first of the people I encountered that weekend who had a Ghost Fleet drop specifically. Keeping in mind that I was the only person playing Ghost Fleet at the event.
Okay.
So Ghost Fleet was clearly a major concern for a lot of people going in. And because it was a 3-list event, people were able to bring something of a silver bullet. Unfortunately for Adam, Scorn silver bullet is Zal 2. It has on paper got the tools. I can't remember which scenario this one was, to be honest. But again, I dropped Ghost Fleet into it, and I was just able to, between using Venoms to get through the very high armor on the feet, and by applying Corrosion, and just applying Parasite to a unit I wanted to kill and counterfeeding, I was able to push ahead 3 points on scenario, put him under pressure, and he wasn't able to create a situation where I couldn't score the rest of the points and win.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a recurring theme across the weekend, because seriously, guys, Steamroller 2017 is live as fuck.
Okay.
Third game was against Martin Kenny and his High Reclaimer, but thanks to Ghost Shot on the rifles, Reclaimer was left unprotected at the bottom of turn two, and so I went for that, killed Reclaimer.
So it's just, shebang of feats, Scourge, Parasite, all that jazz, and you just shot him.
Yeah, I actually missed the Scourge. Because
mm-hmm.
He blocked line of sight for the Arc Node, so I fired the Scourge at the Jack standing in front of him, and double wounded it. And it scattered away, didn't hit Reclaimer. It hit the Jack, knocking him down, and letting me get a crippling grasp onto Reclaimer, but that was still enough to get through with the shots that I had available.
And the feet, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. Again, on the scenario point, I scored 3 points that game. And I only made one move specifically to score points. I moved a Stalker up and killed 2 models contesting a zone. The other 2 points just happened. By virtue of me, like, advancing to do the kill. Okay. Because I'd taken so much board space. So I didn't have to do much work to get those points. It was just take a flag, drop a Stalker into a zone, score my own zone. That wasn't on Recon. I haven't got the names of the scenarios down yet. So that was the end of day one.
Wait, you only played 2? I don't know.
3 games day one. It was a scenario win against Kara, scenario win against Zal 2, and assassination win against High Reclaimer.
Okay.
So, as is traditional, we then had several points. I missed my bus home and slept in Kieran Bulger's house.
Well, sounds like a plan.
And then we returned in for the semi-finals, nice and fresh, knowing that my opponent for that round was going to be Pat Dunford.
Okay.
So, you know, I knew I was going to have to play him at some point that weekend, especially if I was planning on winning.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily for me, he wasn't playing Signar this weekend.
Yes.
Oh, no. I mean,
he was playing Grimkin.
He totally scooped that game, right? Just admit it, he totally scooped it.
Well, he was playing Grimkin, and he was playing only with the models that have been released so far. Which means he didn't have Murder Crows, he didn't have Hollow Men. He only had 2 lists, because only 2 casters are released. So he only had the Child and Heretic.
so.
Yeah, I don't know shit about Grimkin, so I have no idea what that means.
Well, the Child is the best Halley 2 answer in the meta.
Mm-hmm.
By a pretty long shot, as in, might be the only matchup in the entire game right now where Halley 2 is strongly disadvantaged.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, well, this is according to Pat, anyway. But anytime I saw him play against Signar, he just, it was fairly horrific. He just, like, horribly smashed them. I mean, you've got to take into account, you know, the fact that it's Pat, and the fact that Pat knows exactly what makes Signar cry. But he's very confident in the Child and the Signar matchup. So Child was just running rampant on everybody else. The Heretic list was his best guess at a anti-Ghost Fleet list that he could make with the available models. Major caveat on with the available models. So he had two Cage Ragers who are the anti-magic heavies with Wraithbane and Arcane Vortex, and that are also Arknodes. He had two of the Skin and Moans, the big heavy hitters, that also and all of those heavies removed from play.
Okay.
He had two Minimum Units of Dreadrots, who also removed from play undead models. He had a Scattering of Kravitzes for Shield Guards.
Yep.
And did he have a Gorehound? I don't think he had a Gorehound in that version of the list. So it was mostly hanging on four heavies. And his plan going into it, because we discussed the matchup a fair bit, was that the Heretic is nearly impossible for Tanegra to kill. He can't be targeted by spells, and he can't be knocked out, even in direct. Okay. So her assassination's off the table, more or less. Like, perhaps you have a go on the feat, if he's not camping anything. But after the feat's gone, Heretic can basically run around on no camp whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very, very difficult to kill him. So he takes that victory condition away from me. And he hopes that the very high armor of his Skin and Moans, once he gets some corpses going, and the Arcane Vortex and all of the Arcana and Shield Guards just kind of mean that even for Denegra, it's extremely difficult to unpick that brick. The first time you try and Crippling Grasp or Parasite a heavy, it's going to get cancelled. Either by an Arcana or a Vortex, which means you can hold that Arcana for a very long time, meaning that you get to the point where it's not really worth casting your Crippling Grasp because you know it's going to be cancelled. He can opportunistically stop an order with Pandemonium, which means that you're not getting a charge on a heavy at some point. This is on top of the fact that Heretic has Rebuke, which stops charges, and Wall of Flame, which makes it very hard for charges to happen. So, despite the fact that Grimkin have lots of disadvantages, the Heretic does a lot to blunt the advantages that Denegra brings. So Pat thought that if you could hang on past the feat, the initial alpha, and the overwhelming numbers, he could eventually start grinding those high armor heavies through pirates and not dying.
Mm-hmm.
He could kill the Wraith Engine whenever he wants, because he has access to Wraithbane, and one of those heavies will casually murder it. So either it doesn't get involved to apply Dark Shroud, which means getting through the armor is hard, or, you know, it stays out of it. Oh, there was also a Glimmer Imp in that list. That'll be relevant later. So we thought, there's an interesting matchup going on, and then the scenario was announced. Recon 2. At which point, I did a little dance, because it's a scenario with flags I can score with all of my incorporeal solos, which is a great thing for Ghostleaf, because they can threaten those flags from a long way away, and the Wraiths are really good at killing the Gremlin Swarms that he'll be using to contest. And, you know, two zones that are easy enough for me to score as well. And there was a big house in the middle that was going to make splitting his brick difficult. So in the end, he chose to try and hang on to one side of the board, using just kind of Gremlin Swarms and Dreadrots hiding out behind a burning forest, and just try and stop me scoring too many points over there, and lock down the other zone and grind through me. Unfortunately, Denegra's feet, extremely bad for Grimkin, whose threat ranges are pretty poor to start with. I was able to lock that down, that brick down so hard that I could focus on scoring the points on my flag, his flag, and the other zone for two turns running, and grind out the win on scenario. But it's worth saying that if he'd split his brick into a pair of Shield Guards, an Arcane Vortex, and a Skin and Moans in each zone, it could have started to be problematic. You know, it's the kind of game where he just has to hold on long enough that he starts winning one of those zones. Because
why didn't you just drop Scar?
Why didn't I drop Scar? Mostly yeah. because I wanted to see how the Ghost Fleet match went there.
Okay. Like, fair enough.
And also, just, the Negra's Fleet is so brutal in that scenario. And Ghost Fleet is so well equipped to win that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Like, any scenario with flags.
Yeah, you're gonna be fucked.
Especially for the way that I'd built Coven with only Tartarus as a non-caster solo. Which was mm-hmm. a mistake in hindsight. And I won't be doing that again. I'm basically going to be minning those Bane Warrior units to put in Machine Wrench. With the list I had, all those incorporeal solos make you threaten those opposing flags extremely hard.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just such an advantage for Crix in general, but Ghost Fleet in particular.
Mm-hmm.
The only scenarios that Ghost Fleet doesn't love are the one with two big circles.
Yes.
And two flags. But even then, you've got two flags to work with. And you can score one circle with your caster and one circle with the Black Banes. So it's still not too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of said scenario.
That was the final one?
That was the final one where I played Jerry Nolan, who was playing Kador.
Yeah.
And he had brought Sorsha 2, but he had put a Colossal in Sorsha 2.
He brought Sorsha 2 as a Ghost Fleet counter.
Yeah, but then it put a Colossal in and realized that that was actually really bad.
Yeah, and also Sorsha 2 was not the best Ghost Fleet counter.
But he also had Sorsha 1, who he dropped into the matchup.
Yeah, she's much better, actually.
I think she is. I think she is better, like, despite not having the hard counter. However, Coven Fleet or Coven Dark Host is really strong into either of those options, which was, again, a story of my weekend where I never really felt like I could lose the List Chicken. I could just, like, win better. Because I felt like any of the matchups I got, now this is keeping in mind that Jerry beat Jason in the other semi-final, and Jason was playing Signar, and he was playing a couple of lists, including Haley 2, Sons of the Tempest, and an Emo 3 list that could have caused problems for one or the other of my lists. So those would have been some seriously interesting List Chicken had I ended up playing Jason. Going into the final against Sorsha 1 on Outlast. Is it called Outlast? Yeah, Outflank, Outfight, Outlast, yeah. I was feeling pretty good. I went first, ran up into the clouds in the forest, was pretty much entirely stealth, so nothing came in at me. So second turn, I'm setting up to bottom of two, I'm setting up to take some zones, push him out of the zones, get my points, pop my feet, and be in an extremely dominant position. At which point, I very nearly snatched defeat from the jaws of victory when I activated my third witch, and she was out on the flank, but he'd run around some rockets towards her. So I wanted to get her away from them, because they might have been able to loop outside the feet and take some shots at her. So I, like, measured six, and I wasn't quite happy with how far away that got her. I was like, okay, I'll go a little bit further. I'll, you know, do a run. At which point I realized I hadn't popped my feet yet.
Okay.
But Jerry was kind enough to let me reverse my 8-inch run back to a 6-inch walk and pop the feet, because we were still in that activation. Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
That was very nice of him. Would have been a very different game. Because then, obviously, he would have probably counterfeited and murdered all my Bane Riders. I mean,
yes.
I still had a fuck pile of Bane Warriors. I don't think it would have necessarily, like, been a, I lose the game instantly on that. But it certainly changes the dynamics of the game, the way it folded out.
And you probably lose that one witch that runs there.
Decent chance of losing that witch. Well, actually, if I had completed the run, that witch would have been safe. But the feet wouldn't have been open, the rest of my army wouldn't have been. He allows me to reduce the run back to 6 inches, pop the feet. He does some contesting with some heavies, does some backing up. Can't really do much to kill anything, so mostly just kills a couple of Bane Riders. But the Bane Riders had kind of jammed past the zones, meaning his contesting was fairly sparse and, like, just toes in, leaving me with very few things I had to kill next turn to get my second and third point. One thing I think is worth noting at this point, actually, is that the Egregor was scoring my flag. One of the witches was scoring the left-hand zone. Tartarus was threatening scoring his flag the next turn.
Okay.
So having a caster that can, like, contest multiple items, pretty great. That next turn, his backing off all results in him killboxing Sorsha by, like, half an inch. I karmically cleared my slate by letting him push Sorsha back in.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So this is a Sorsha 1 list with min units of every kind of Winter Guard with maximum rockets. A battle engine.
Yeah. Such an original list.
During my feat, his battle engine had tried to trample up and, you know, get some shots on some stuff, contest his own, contest the flag. Like, the Battle Legend came up, contested three elements, tried to get some shots into the Egregore, but the Egregore's Defense 13 thwarted him, because the Disco Ball has real defense. And his Disco
that's
Dancing.
Defense 13, yeah?
Yep, and on feet, obviously, functionally 15. I kill some stuff. I go to 4 points to one, or 4 points to zero. Then he kills, Sorsha comes up, feats, kills Tartarus on her flag, murders all of my Bane Riders, and is frozen like the front line of my Bane Warriors. But again, because I'd pushed the line of battle so far back, his contesting was fairly sparse. And I was able to, there was two Winter Guard contesting Sorsha's flag. There was Joe contesting my flag, and one lone Winter Guard hiding behind a house next to six unfrozen Banes, contesting the left zone. And the right zone was contested by, he was winning the right zone pretty hard, because the feet had gone in most there. He'd killed most of the stuff on the right, put two Jacks in the zone. So I wasn't clearing the right-hand zone, but I was able to get my Infernal Machine Stalker out from the flanks into the two guys contesting Sorcia's flag. Joe just got murdered horrifically by incidental models and a Stygian Abyss. And that poor, poor Winter Guard got charged by like five Banes.
Oh.
Because I wanted to be very sure.
Yeah. This is harder times when you just roll ones and twos.
Exactly. You don't make this uncertain in any way. The game ended with one witch scoring my flag, one witch scoring his left-hand zone, the Egregore scoring Sorcia's flag, and the other witch standing in the right-hand zone, where if I'd had maybe two, three more Banes, I would have scored all four scenario elements with the Coven, which I found terribly satisfying. That feels like a thing that shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Maybe so. Alright, so...
So that was the tournament.
They actually, I hear they didn't really crown you king, because you already were.
No, I was...
They just gave you another trophy.
I was crowned king at the last Irish Masters run by Stuart Gorman. So he'd been running the Irish Masters for years. It was at his Irish Masters the phrase King of Ireland was coined in order to give the crown to Yoka. So it was announced that the last king would be crowned at that Irish Masters. That's where I got my crown. And indeed where I got slapped across the face extremely hard. Because Stu had a bit of a crowning ceremony where I was asked to kneel.
And he decided not to.
He places the crown on my head and then said, historically, crownings weren't done with two swords on the shoulders. The idea of the sword on your shoulder is to remind you of your mortality when you're becoming king. However, before the swords, you were reminded of your mortality and your humanity with a slap in the face. And then he slapped me in the face.
Ouch.
He did not fuck about with that slap. He slapped me through my head.
Ouch.
And boy did he, and indeed everyone in attendance, enjoy the fuck out of that.
I can imagine. Good work, Stu. Good work. Yeah. And then you decided after some pints that you loved him.
So.
We're still talking about Stu. You cannot hate that guy.
Can't. It's as much as you would like to. You cannot.
Also, he's a crossbow professor. I mean, a crossbow.
He is a doctor of crossbows. Which is one of the better doctrine choices.
Yes. You have to doctor in anything. I mean, let it be crossbow.
And I want to reiterate once again my challenge to the King in Exile.
Yes, you kid, you know what to do.
Actually, let's do it at the WTC. Let's do a crown a crown match at the WTC.
No, don't. He's gonna beat you. Then you run out of ideas to bring him back to Ireland.
No, I'm gonna beat him and then he has to come back.
No. You cannot be the King of Ireland outside of Ireland. Not done. You have to. It has to be fought on home turf. What the hell? I'm not going to give up the crown of Belgium in Canada. Or what, if you beat Bubba Dalton, all of a sudden you become King of the North? No. When we become King of the North, you go to Canada, freeze your butt off, and then, beat Bubba Dalton.
Class, you're now being appointed Hand of the King for your excellent advice.
Oh, that's fine. I can handle that.
I see what you did there.
Ended. Good. So, anyway, we had something for Ryan to talk about. What was it again?
Well, one thing that I think really springs out of like kind of that series of battle reports is just how live SR 2017 is. And I think it would be a good thing for us all to talk about.
Sure. I had a game yesterday.
Yeah.
With Coven Dark Host, against Legion, I think. And was on Recon. They won 8-0 as well. Just, it's so hard for your opponent to really contest meaningfully, and it's so easy to score something. I mean, my Coven list, has only one unit of, Bane Thralls. Our Bane Warriors. It has a Wraith Engine though, but, I have, a Scarlet Troll for free because I only have one unit of Bane Warriors and I wouldn't know what else to spend the free solo on. And I have a machine rate as well. So I have the, you know, the dispensable solos to go and score a flag somewhere. And yeah, I mean, I scored, once a zone and a flag on my turn. And then actually on his turn, he couldn't get close enough to meaningfully contest everything.
Yeah, it's not that hard to score on your own turn.
Yeah, I mean, score on the opponent's turn. I mean, I managed to score on his turn.
Hmm.
But because he just couldn't get near the flag enough. And I scored a point there. And so, yeah, all I need to do was just actually sit back and relax and just win the game because, yeah, I would score 2 points.
Yeah. Like, I think, like, people are reacting in sheer terror at the moment about that. But I think a lot of those wins that are happening right now are happening because people aren't aware yet how live this is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, both Crix players and everybody else, are going to have to get used to this new status quo. Just contesting scenario might not be enough anymore. You have to have a plan to score points to counter your opponent's point scoring.
Because, yeah, your opponent is going to score. It's just going to happen.
Like, previously, if you were the defensive player, you would make do with contesting, right? You just try and hold them off from five and get your attrition done. That's not good enough anymore.
You can't score, or you cannot score. But I mean, there's no dominating anymore. But that doesn't mean, I mean, on scenarios like Recon, you can score 5 points in a turn. I mean, 2 zones, 2 flags, and an objective.
Yep. I mean, yeah, if you really take your foot off the gas, you could just lose instantly. But it's not that you can score 5 points in a turn. It's there's 5 places you have to defend.
Well, yeah, exactly. 5 places you have to defend. If you have a low model count army and you come out on a scenario like Recon, it can really well happen in just a single turn. It can happen.
I mean, if you go 3 points up in a turn, the opponent is under so much pressure with his 4 or 5 scenario elements. Because you only have to slip in at 2. I mean, in that game against Pat, if the scenario hadn't been as live, I think he would have started being advantaged in a couple of turns time. But because he had to spend so much effort trying to stop me slipping in the odd point, and even then I was still able to do it. It just completely warped how he had to play his game.
It really takes some getting used to. Thing is that faction that allows you to get used to this the easiest is probably Crix, because we anyway bring a lot of dudes. We're accustomed to playing on the whole table.
Yep.
So, and we're just fast enough to make people react to us.
We've got a lot of incorporeal dudes, which make contesting that little bit easier.
Yeah. And which makes scoring a little bit easier as well. You can just run the machine rate through your army that is standing somewhere to kill shit. Just run the machine rate right through to go and score a flag.
Or do, you know, the very best play in all of War Machine right now, which is run up your Wraith engine, create a machine Wraith, knock a Jack out of contesting while scoring the enemy flag.
Yeah. Yeah, it's reminiscent of Dark Industries, but not as cool, but still cool.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, you know, when you charge up Denny 2 and Dark Banishment someone out of his own and then feed.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of like, I've just changed the board state and pushed the game heavily in my favor, except you're committing a solo to do it instead. Maybe a battle engine if you don't have your own machine wraith. Which is yet another point in favor of the machine wraith. He generates scoring models.
You mean a battle engine?
Yeah. Or the wraith engine, yeah. I think that there's a number of things that you have to think about in a way you never did before. Like, when you're doing target selection, normally you're thinking about threat ranges, right? If you're doing the attrition, like, taking the perspective of the defensive army for a second, because that's what the Krix opponent's likely to be in these situations. Normally you would think about what's in my threat range and what is threatening me. So you sandpaper off, the classic attrition play, kill the things that threaten me, don't advance any further, is normally how you do target selection in War Machine. I think in 2017, target selection has got way more layers than that. You've got to target select models that are in range of scoring. You've got to target select models that can come and contest. You've got to target select models or contesting elements that you could possibly score this turn, even if otherwise, in a pure attrition game, they wouldn't be the best target. Which I think also translates to, you've got to accept more of your models dying than you would in a normal attrition game.
Yeah.
Because you've just got to give shit up to not lose on scenario. And I don't mean defend scenario. Defending scenario is not enough anymore. You've got to aggressively score points to hang in there with strong scenario casters, which is a very difficult puzzle. I think it's a really interesting puzzle that we haven't really had to solve yet. Like, it doesn't look like anything that I've seen before in War Machine. Not really. So I think this packet is going to be a whole new year for how games are going to play out. And I think there's a whole level of new skills that we have to unlock to be great at it. I think Krix are really well advantaged.
Yeah, it's just by how we are.
Yeah, a lot of the kind of default ways that we're playing our games anyway just happen to be really good at it. Playing wide and playing aggressive, taking up table space and forcing back the line of engagement. Those classic Krix plays are very, very strong. You know, I saw one person at the Gauntlet who was terrorizing people with the Iron Fang theme, with just like how fast 30 Iron Fangs got across the table and started like pressuring scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I am really strongly looking at playing Denegra 1 in Infernal Machines with Double Soul Hunter and Advanced Deploying Mechanithralls, just to see how much you can push the scenario pressure thing. Because if you can take up the table space and then stop people getting into contest by debuffing their speed and stopping them running, you know, I think that's... Infernal Machines is the new version of the Denegra 2 Double Stixis Raiders from Mark 2. It's the thing that's fast enough, takes up the table space. Ambushing units are incredible in the scenario pack, because they can get on and score a scenario element out of nowhere. And they threaten models contesting scenario elements. There's lots going on.
Maybe so.
Which kind of leads us to the elephant in the room. The only thing that's stopping Krix is supreme dominance. And so, I would posit, is the number one problem that Krix players need to solve right now. And unfortunately, it's an old problem, one that we know so well. It's Haley 2. Haley 2 is the only caster in the game that is better at the scenario packet than Denegra 1. That is my bold statement. I think the bold part of the statement is that Denegra 1's the second best at it. It's not that bold to say Haley 2's the best. But Haley 2 is the only person stopping Denegra 1 being the queen of War Machine right now. Which has kind of been the case for a long time. But
them sisters, huh.
Twisted Sisters. Like, that's why I was talking about why we need to, like, think different. But yeah, I'd like to throw it to Ryan now and ask, you played more Haley 2 than either of us.
With her or against her?
Both probably, but certainly with her. So,
yeah.
What does she not like to see? What kind of things do you think that we need to start thinking about when we're trying to figure out how to beat Haley 2?
I think we're trying to figure out Haley 2 from a Krix perspective.
Yeah, how do we beat her?
Well, it's kind of hard because I think Haley 2 lists are all in a bit of flux at the moment. There's some places that are still on like Jarlath Electrobot's list from a couple months back with like the Hurricane and the Strider and a couple of Fireflies. But I think the Nordics have, I think they probably kind of worked that out with Coven Dark Coast, because Coven Dark Coast was everywhere at Iron Moot. The latest builds that seem to be doing the rounds or seem to be quite popular anyway, some kind of Stormwall double Strider build, which is quite interesting, because then you've got the pod is like a whole level of bullshit on its own, like even before you add in Haley 2 spells and her feet, and because you can now you can score flag with it, it doesn't come up often, but having to explain to your opponent why your free solo that your storm will just shut out is actually scoring their flag is a difficult conversation, shall we say.
Yeah.
I think it'll be, as in, both, like, for example, if you take Coven Dark Oath as a default drop, in that then the Coven player is looking for Infernal Machine Arcanode Angle to get at the important solos, the Strangeways, Junior. You can fish for crit blinds on Striders, but I'm not a fan of crit fishing.
No.
Especially when you're, if you've got the Wither Shadow Combine, it's a whole nother kettle of fish, but when you haven't got the Wither Shadow Combine, it's not good. So, I do wonder if there's something there maybe with Striders and or Fireflies and, I think you definitely need the Stormwall just because the Stormwall buys you time. As in, you can, like TK the Bane riders close to start shooting them with, Charges, Cyclones, Fireflies, that kind of stuff. And then the Stormwall just kind of anchors like two zones maybe. And they just sit there and you have to play the patient game with the Stormwall, I think. If you throw it in, then it just gets bogged down and it can't extricate itself from combat. So I think we'll probably see maybe a little bit of a comeback for the Stormwall because the Hurricane is just, I don't think it's that good against, Coven Dark Oath because you can fire, like you can walk in and start shooting the lightning guns and stuff. But actually, if you want to take the long range shot with the cannon to try and maybe blow up Bane Warriors, all it takes is like one dodgy drift, a crank damage roll on a Bane Rider, and you're getting like Bane Riders to face. And like that's not something you can afford to happen. If, like if you temporal accelerated the Hurricane and you didn't feed because you're planning on not getting charged, and then you accidentally pop Vengeance and suddenly, I don't know, three or four Bane Riders are charging into your Hurricane or Thorn or your Strider or whatever, that's a really bad start. So I think we'll see more Stormwall. I was intrigued by your mention of the Holy Two Sons of the Tempest. I'm not sure. Was that with double Tempest Blazers?
It is with double Blazers, yeah. I think that was a bit of a specific, like, let's really try and give Ghostly the hard day sort of swerve.
Yeah.
I don't
think it falls apart against Dark Coast, though, because...
Yeah, I think...
They just don't do enough against Armour 20 Bane Riders.
Yeah, even brutal shots when your dice off 10.
Yes.
I also think that...
Yeah.
I also think that the Electrobots thing can play easily into Ghostly. But
yeah,
Dark Host might just not be the thing.
It's a bit of an interesting conundrum at the moment in terms of lists and stuff, because if you look at like what the Nordics were playing, like Sweden and the Norwegians, and it's kind of like you can tell that they've obviously all played quite a lot of the Signar and the Crix match. Because it seems to be a bit of an arms race between Crix and Signar at the moment to get to the top. As soon as one of them are finding an answer to the latest breed of Holy Two, then Holy Two's finding a new evolution or something that is just is working. I do wonder if the answer is not Holy Two. I have my own ideas for what I think the Signar answer to Crix is, but I'm going to keep my trap shut about it because I don't want to give them my ideas.
Okay. Oh yeah, also because we're not a Signar bot yet. I understand.
Yeah. It's just because Signar's got a huge stable of casters that they can call on. And yes, Holy Two is very good. If you can build Holy Two for 80% of the field. Yeah, so she's not great in the mirror and she's proven that she's not as good maybe as people thought she was in the crypt. That maybe if you can build something for the mirror that also plays Crix, then I think that's where I would start by going back to Signar.
Mm-hmm. Well.
Maybe, Haley 3, maybe.
Yeah, she's still
degenerate, and there's a Trench of Team Force coming, so maybe she'll see some more table time again.
Yeah, I think it's weird that she drops off every time. It's just like, you get the feeling that she's just maybe, yeah, too difficult as a caster. I don't know. She's so strong. I don't understand why she's not on everybody's pairing. She's just really,
like, even
really
without like trenches and stuff. Like you can play her in Storm Division and she's fine. Like Al Johnson played her in Dawn Division at the Welsh Masters back in May, and he won with her. So, like, he played Hayley 2 in the final for the Mirror, but, like, he's schooling people with Hayley 3 Dawn Division. Like, there's no trenches in sight. Heavy metal as well, because you get, like, the Junior, you get Jake's, you still get Thorn running around doing bullshit Thorn things. You take Sword Knights. Sword Knights get, what they call it, they get +2% against melee attacks on the base to base. So they can get up to like just 16 or 17 or something while they're under temporal flux and just standing in a zone and be annoying.
Oh no, don't be telling people about temporal flux Sword Knights. No one's playing them, but they're super annoying.
You can edit that bit out.
Like, yeah, Tanegra's okay with it, but everyone else is pissed off.
Like, we know there's no trenches and themes at the moment, but actually, she's still plenty fine in the other themes.
Yeah.
It's true. Though, I mean, the main reason is Hayley 2 is just the queen of the universe right now. Like, it's
maybe.
Just, it's so hard to work through that feat, given the speed of scenario.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to kind of, obviously you don't beat Hayley 2 with Theory Machine, but trying to get my head around how you might begin to beat her on most of those scenarios, a lot of that involves, like, making sure you can score your own flag.
Yeah.
And, if at all possible, maybe score a point back somewhere else. The one thing that I think we have going for us in those matchups is that the scenarios are quite wide, which is one of the best defenses against control casters, in that she has to pick a side, and the side she picks, you kind of have to admit that she's going to kill your whole army.
Yeah.
But if you're scoring points back on the other side, and you can push back around, the long game favors the not Hayley 2 player most of the time.
Yeah.
If you can keep enough shit alive and keep the scenario alive. But the second part's way harder than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The common wisdom at the moment seems to be that Coven Dark House is the way to start it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that matchup, what would your priorities be?
Well, versus Hayley 2.
Versus Hayley 2.
Depends on the, as in, the absolute first priority for Hayley 2 is you've absolutely got to keep Island Strangeway safe. Like, if Strangeway dies early, then the Wraith Engine basically gets to contest forever the Incorporeal huge base, and, like, Hayley's, scenario game plan just goes down the pan. So Strangeway's like, even if you have to block line of sight with, like, the Squire, Junior, and Hayley, like, Strangeway cannot die.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the other side of things, for the Coven player, Strangeways has to die.
Strangeways has to die. Like, if Strangeways or Junior, like, one or the other, if you get a chance, you want to be abused, you want to be angling for it, as in, you can't play for it, but you can threaten with it, as in, if you run, like, run your node up turn one, like, behind your clouds, or behind a forest, or a bit of terrain, or something, and then get, like, Infernal Machine on it turn one, so then turn two, you've got a 18-inch run with 8 focus for 2, double booster Stygian Abyss, just because, like, Strangeways is, for some reason, armor 16 with 8 boxes now, so one Stygian Abyss is just not going to cut it. So you absolutely need 8 focus for 2 Stygian Abyss. And if you're fishing for Junior, he's probably camping 1, maybe. What is it? If he's Arcane Shield, yeah, he's probably only camping 1. So, he's armor 19 against the first Stygian Abyss, so dice off 7. So, you're basically fishing for big numbers on both damage rolls. But, if you can get rid of Arcane Shield, that makes the Colossal a lot easier to kill. And if you can get Strangeways, then the Wraith Engine basically gets to play in the Sprinkler.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating for me, because I really like the Coven list without the Wraith Engine in it.
Yeah.
But, in the Hayley 2 matchup, if you can turn the Wraith Engine on, if you can take away the threats to it, it solves a lot of the problems.
It does, and the Steamroller objective change to Armory, meaning that you only get magic attacks on your next attack, not the whole activation, is massive for the Wraith Engine, because it means, if you take the absolute worst case, for example, which is like a Hurricane shooting at a Wraith Engine with a Firefly nearby, that you're taking one boosted POW, 18 rather than 3,
mm-hmm.
which is huge. It means you're probably killing. You can't kill him one turn because you can't roll high enough.
Yeah. Plus, your objective is healing the Wraith Engine.
Like, you're never going to make machine race with the Wraith Engine and the Hayley 2 mirror match because all the solos are like miles away. But maybe if you can keep the race engine safe, because the race engine is your scenario insurance piece, I guess, and that, but it depends whether you can. The Heli 2 player is probably going to give you all of that. And with an 18-inch round and a 10-inch round, if you get to go first with Coven, that's 28-inch threat from anywhere.
Yeah, if you can get that arc node about 21, 22 inches up in some terrain, like if you can give it a full run the first turn with Infernal Machine on it and get it into like some safe nook, you can threaten Ireland almost anywhere.
It's one instance as well where I think you might actually be better off with a Scarlock as your third free thing. So if you go for, like, you basically switch some points around so that you either, you take one max unit of Warriors maybe.
Yeah.
And then you take a Scarlock as your free because you don't want to have to pay for the Ghost Report. And it gives you that extra linear threat and that you can run, like, right up behind, like, a house in the middle of a board or a forest in the middle of a board. Basically keep yourself completely safe from, like, bottom of one retaliation, and then you run the Scarlock up, like, with base to base with the Aggregor, but still within six of the node. So then, even if Haley does come up and feet, you've still got a Ghost Walk, a 9-inch walk, and then 10-inch spell, so actually you can still threaten quite deep, even if she does do a bottom of 1 feet.
And if she does a bottom of 1 feet, happy days, like, that is one of your best case scenarios, is a bottom of 1 Haley 2 feet.
Yeah. That's weird. I think, like, I've watched a few of the Armour games back on YouTube, which are really brilliant, actually. For anyone who hasn't seen them, they're on War Room PL, which is their YouTube channel for the Polish guys who stream and record games. Really good quality video, so.
They've got commentary on most of them as well.
Yeah, like, some of them were recorded, but not streamed, and some of those are in Swedish and other funky European languages, but most people know the rules, and you can, like, if they point at an alien, then they point at a model, and then it gets moved, you can probably guess that she did TK or something. So it was kind of fine. Without naming any names, there is one of them where the aforementioned play goes off. I saw the arc node run, and then I saw Strange Ways. I thought, oh, he's gonna fish for the Stygian Abyss to kill Strange Ways. And then watching it, I noticed it picked up a solo and then picked up a token off the Stormwall's base, and I was like, oh, that was Junior. This is top of two, so basically, Coven's run up, Haley 2's run up, Junior's just died, 3 Bane Riders and a Wraith Engine Charter Stormwall, it dies.
Hmm.
And then the Haley 2 player is like, well, I think we'll call it there. And they start packing up their toys, because, like, I figure if your Stormwall died before Haley's feet did, then that's kind of a bad place to be. One of those things as well, like, Steamroller 17 especially, you absolutely have to work out which pieces are basically critical to your game plan. Like, one of the games I played, we had a local Steamroller last weekend, one of the games I played was against Fyroth 1 Shadows of the Retribution Theme Force, so Mage Hunters and Infiltrators and Assassins and all sorts of funky stuff.
Mm.
But there's one point where I managed to get the Wraith Engine over to a Mage Hunter. So I killed that, made a Machine Wraith, and then I've got a choice of his 3 jacks that I can get the Machine Wraith. So I've got Imperatus, Sphinx, or the Manticore. And basically, the Manticore is being a dick and blocking off. Like, there's a house on one end of a zone, and the Manticore is, like, blocking off space next to that. So basically, I can't charge anything meaningful, like, on his flag. So, one of those things where I looked at it and goes, I really, really want to kill Imperatus, because it's Imperatus, he's expensive, and he's valuable, and he's dangerous. But then you look at it, and you go, well, actually, if I don't kill that Manticore, then I can't contest this element of his scenario, so then I'm just going to lose on scenario. So then you end up going, well, I'll kill the Manticore with the, hit the Manticore with the Machine Wraith, kill that instead. And, yeah, kind of trying to identify where you can afford to give up attrition pieces to actually get the pieces that are relevant to your scenario game.
Yeah, I think that's really important in the new pack.
You have to give stuff up now. You can't score and just contest for free.
No, you'll just lose. There's too many zones.
Yeah, as in you lose too many CPs and because it's entirely possible to set it up so that you can score the elements on your side of the board especially the quick side, because, like, table presence in terms of being in zones and threatening the other side of zones has never been a problem for quick. Like, all our infantry, all our best infantry anyway, is our melee, and we've got deep outside the wazoo, so actually you want to be in the zone threatening deep. So it's actually, I think it's quite possible with most of our casters to set up situations where you can go, well, I'm going to set my caster on this flag, this zone, whatever, on my side of the board, and basically then your opponent's whole zone is centered around basically clearing a lane to dig deep and get something over to contest. Because if they don't, then two turns, if you sat on your side of the board, if you're both scoring the same amount of points, then it's just going to backfire and they're going to lose on scenario.
I think you're right about all of those things.
Yeah, and it's this weird situation where, like Haley Tur especially is incredibly strong in the new steamroller packet, but then so is Mark III Crick, because the themes are, they have a ton of zone presence, and like Haley Tur lists are generally quite low model count in that they're unforgiving in terms of, inefficient activation, shall we call it, where you basically have to get absolute value out of every model. So I do wonder if maybe when the Trencher Theme Force drops, maybe we'll see a Haley II Trencher build where you've got a ton of models that can CRA and Swift Hunter and all that kind of fun.
And really not die.
Yeah.
Like, I think very tough lists have a lot of value in the scenario packet as well.
Yeah. At least
very tough lists that can spread out a bit.
Yeah,
definitely.
Sorry, trolls.
Hey, at least they got arcane. If the CID goes through untouched, at least there's arcane repeater. So we got bigger control areas. I reckon that Madrak list could contest like a motherfucker.
What do you mean, Madrak 2?
Madrak 1. 3. The even ground. And the Sanguine Bond champs.
Oh, yeah, that.
At a 12-inch range ahead of Madrak. You could get. A 12-inch control bubble is big enough to have a toe in lots of zones.
Yeah, true.
Can you do that really with the CID Hooch Hauler as well, to make them all stumbling drunk, tough, they're not damn.
Not if you want
with
to
plus defense.
Not if you want to double champs.
Okay, rubbish.
If you're okay with single champs, then you can bring a Hooch Hauler.
Nice.
In a moment of remarkable foresight, the Norkin theme only allows one unit of champs, because you need to bring Scaldi with them to make the Norkin.
Okay.
That unit, that list would be more like, you know, champs, long riders, and ambush bears. Which I think is a pretty good list too. But it's not, it's not the all in on champs with warders backing them up, monster, come through band of heroes, which is probably pretty bad for Ghostly, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I heard people try it. I mean, just band of heroes in general in Ghostly, and from what I hear, it's just not enough. Just slightly not enough.
Yeah, but if everything is defense like millions and packing sorcerers and stuff, maybe it is okay.
I've lost to it 3 times, so it's definitely doable. With the right build.
Which was it in your case? Which build was it?
I've lost repeatedly to Gristle T, because she has an incredible personal assassination threat. Like, you have to respect it if you're playing anyone. As well as, you basically, anything that's a single wound and not the stones, you ditch it. So you take warders, you take champions, you take long riders, which then basically relegates all of the rifles and that sort of shooting to insignificance. Because then if you move out the rifles, if you try and debuff champions, say, you got all the warders hanging out behind them. So if you shoot the champion, the warders shield guard the shots, they're under the crow stone. If you go for the rifles on the warders, with debuffs, then you get the shots into them, but you can't put multiple shots into one model very reliably because it gets shield guarded, and then the sorcerer just knocked the debuff off anyway, so you can't even like upkeep and then recast on a different unit the following turn. So trying to manage these different vectors when you can't play Denny too aggressively, or you just get knocked down by Gristle, and yeah. You end up having to relegate the race engine to, I'm going to block line of sight to Denny on feet turn. And that's basically it. And then it potentially risks dying to shooting and stuff. So it's, with the right build, I think it's very playable for
course. I wonder if it's better still with Gunbjorn, because you've got a turn where the rifles and all the shooting basically can't touch anything. So, yeah. But then I wonder if that loses maybe to Coven Dark Coast, I don't know.
Well, the thing to beating a shooting troll build is just to get to kill stone. Well, it's always key to beating trolls.
But
we don't always have the right tools, but if you can remove the troll leader from play, some builds, some Kriggs builds have the tools, well then, it's, well, smooth runnings from there.
It's this weird situation at the moment where, and I think the Swedish and that sort over in Iron Moat, where people are still so fixated on Ghost Fleet and trying to find their answer to it. They're not thinking about Dark Coast, and I've said it to people that have asked me about XYZ list and the Ghost Fleet, and I've said, like, well, you can build such and such caster for Ghost Fleet.
And then Dark Coast pantses it.
If you build too hard with guns and remove from play for Ghost Fleet, then you just get absolutely just battered by Coven Dark Coast, because you can't deal with the Bane Riders before they come in with the feet. Then they come in with the feet, you can't really retaliate massively deep into, like, the Bane Warriors and stuff. You either get shut out of scenario or everything just dies. So you're kind of in that, people attacking for crits are in this situation where they want to build, but they've got tools for Ghost Fleet and they've got tools for Dark Coast, but not necessarily a silver bullet for either one, because as soon as you build too hard for one, you get battered by the other.
It's tough.
It's a pretty good place to be as a crits player.
It's like a pretty great pair, but it's still got the, like, I'm not convinced that Coven Dark Coast is, like, it's not advantage to the Haley 2, right?
No.
Like, I don't think anyone would agree that.
And what is?
There's a game.
Yeah, also.
The question is there a Dark Coast list that is, if not advantage, but better equipped for Haley 2?
Well, supposedly the Coven Dark Coast the Swedes were playing is their best drop into Haley 2.
But is it, though? Like, is there a better caster to run that list out of?
I've always had this weird dislike of playing pure melee lists into hard control casters with good guns. Like, the thought of playing an all melee list, even one that's very resilient to shooting, into a Haley 2 hard control list is just, I can't comprehend it. I've watched the games and I've seen them play out, but I think there's too many ways the world can come off.
So do you think, like, do you have any plans to try something better that you think might be better?
Yeah, it's, I don't know, because I know Ghost Fleet is, I've played Ghost Fleet into Haley 2 a couple of times, and it's okay, it's not great. But then what is great into Haley 2? So, whereas the Coven Dark Coast build has the potential to blind destroyers if you want to go for that play, so I think if it comes down to, if it's a Haley 2 list without striders, then I think Coven are probably not a great choice, because your best target for Sidon Abyss is already gone. So if they've got, like, multiple heavies or Centurions and, like, anything like that, like multiple heavies maybe. It's like a Centurion sat in a zone with Archangel Shield. Dark Coast, I don't think, can reliably kill it, because you're not getting a machine wraith from, there's no living stuff to get a machine wraith out of. You can't charge it. And at best, you've got walking past 17, which are dice off 7. So even Bane Warriors walking in, dice off 7 do, 3 and a bit damage apiece. So you need to get about 12 of them, about 8 of them in, which is not really possible on a small base with a 5-inch walk. So I think it depends very much on the Haley 2 build. If it's got Striders and huge bases and stuff, then Coven are probably grand. But as soon as it's got lots of light, maybe multiple heavies, then I think you've probably got to go for...
You got to try Ghost Fleet.
Because you've got the bodies to basically grind it out.
I was intrigued by something you said earlier on in the chat about switching the casters in that pairing and going for Coven Ghost Fleet and Denegra Dark Coast.
I've thought about it a lot just because, Ghost Fleet in general has some issues with range removed from play, so If it's like top of the list, I've not tried most of these. I'm not really sure whether they're that good, but like Ossian has Range from Open Place, Oshkatur, Gumbion, Siege, if Signal players want to dig that deep in the Jank Tank. If you take like Ossian and Gumbion, which are not uncommon casters, whereas actually if you put Ghost Fleet with Coffin, then actually that one turn where he's got, where you're in his threat range to shoot you, you need to pop feet and you can't really shoot anything meaningfully. If you can walk to shoot you, then all the shots are -2 and death 13 up to 15 is actually a really relevant swing. And then taking Denny with the Dark Coast to add to the all stealth theme. So you've got all the Banes sat in, forest and fog and, the ones that aren't sat under fog, they get to sit in the Wraith Engine bubble and all be happy and fuzzy with the +2 armor. Then Denny can, literally, she can run the table in terms of, because the only thing Banes really struggle with is A, getting there, and B, hitting things that are higher than death 12. Where Denny fixes anything death 14, just gets absolutely crushed by Bane Warriors. Like death 14 Angels, death 14 Warp Balls, taking them down to like 12, 15 is two or three Bane Warriors will kill her heavy quite reliably. She's got stealth, so she can quite happy camp on a flag or sit in a zone. And you get kind of a little bit of a control element with her feet stopping running or charging, so your Bane Warriors can't really get jammed up. And you can start threatening to score points on your opponent's turn. So I think that might be, it's worth bearing in mind anyway, and that I think there's something there. It's worth trying anyway.
I'm really happy with the Coven, or with the, yeah, the Coven Dark Host, Negra 1 Ghost Leap pair that I played at Gauntlet, but this is going to be one of my last chances to play in an event before WTC List Lock. So I want to try out something that might be a bit clever. To maybe swerve, because let's be honest, every Crix player on the planet coming to WTC seems to be in agreement that Denny 1 Ghost Fleet, Coven Dark Host is the best pair.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to do something a bit clever, even if that's just switching those two casters and surprising some people and fucking with people's counters, you know?
Yeah, there's this one important part, I think important observation in the Denny Dark Alep. The Nagra Coven pairing is that it's not really good in the mirror.
Well,
maybe.
I mean, Ghost Fleet is great into the mirror, assuming that your opponent doesn't have Ghost Fleet.
Well, my plan to the mirror is just be better at Ghost Fleet.
Yeah.
Which I think is an okay plan. I mean, we've been Ghost Fleet hipsters since the start. We've got more Ghost Fleet reps than most.
Well. Yeah, you might say that, but doesn't make it true, in my case. Maybe so.
I mean, just, you can't always just... I mean, the mirror is a different set of problems. That kind of suggests, oh, maybe you want to do Lich 1 Fleet as a thing. You know, back to that favorite of Ryan's.
Like, maybe.
Lich 1 Fleet is super good against the Negra 1 Fleet, because you can just feed Nor FP all the dudes.
Yeah, but maybe.
Lich 3 is also surprisingly good in the mirror. Mostly because of Hellfire, and because of the fact that he can throw out a lot of Hellfire.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Lich 3 builds that are quite interesting. Why not Lich 3 Ghost Fleet, like we mentioned on last episode?
Why not, indeed? I'm really into the idea of trying out some Lich 3 Dark Host, because Ashen Veil on Bane Knights is amazing.
Yeah, but Ashen Veil on whatever, any pirate thing, or anything pirate-like is great as well. And the thing is, Bane Knights they're like the prettiest models we have, but yeah, they gave him defensive line and all that, and they're maybe more difficult, or set defense, and they're more difficult to kill and whatever, but they don't do a lot. And we mostly have a model that doesn't really do a lot, and it's called a Wraith Engine.
Yeah.
That's true. And that's another model you want to take with the Knights, which kind of compounds the problem.
Yeah, you don't want two units that, or two sets of points that don't really do a lot. And
no, I keep trying to find places for Bane Knights because I actually really like their current stat line.
Yeah.
But the best solution, or best place I found for them is in like a Lich 2 list that's got double Warriors, double Knights.
Sure.
And that's not great. It's just a bit Bane spammy.
Yeah. And I think the same list would be better if, yeah, you'd remove those knights for Bane riders, because you don't need that many models for the feat anyway.
Maybe.
I don't think you're wrong, but I'm really determined to find somewhere the knights are good. I just don't know what it is yet.
Okay.
Because I have 30 of them, damn it. And I'm going to find a list that plays 30 of them.
You can still scry Dark Host.
Yeah, Dark Host people. Dark Host is where you go. There was a guy playing Lich 2 Dark Host on Steamroller last weekend, running Lich 2 with no Bane Riders, no Wraith Engine. Just literally a sea of small bases and Dara Wrath. So I think he had 2 full units of Warriors, 2 full units of Knights, Dara Wrath, and then some little Chicken Jacks and like running around. Watching his games and watch people trying to get meaningful attacks into that sea of pain. It's quite amusing in its own right.
Yeah, like, I think that's a decent list. I don't think it solved any particular problems that we've identified. But I think it's one of those lists that I think is good in the absence of the rest of the meta. Like, it's a good War Machine list against the generic other army, but it's not a good list into anything that we need to solve.
Yeah. Maybe.
I've just become slightly obsessed since the weekend with just like, alright, there's gotta be a solution to Haley 2. I refuse to bow to the salt that suggests that the solution is getting an errata. I mean, if she gets errated, I won't object because it's justified, but I would rather put my mental energy into solving her.
Okay, yeah, and complain about her.
Mm.
Well, thinking about her, you mentioned that Grim can totally stomp her. How?
It's just the combination of like all the overlapping defenses that Grim can have that make it hard to spell them, hard to shoot them. Their armor gets really big. Like basically, their brick just weathers Haley.
So actually, they just
weather the whole 3 turns. Itself. Like, you know, the 3 turns of Haley beating the shit out of you. They just weather it.
Okay.
Cool.
So, the thing is, so that the solution would be, we try to survive for 3 turns.
Yeah.
There's like two ways to survive. One, you don't die. 2, you come back.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I think Ghost Fleet's okay into some Haley builds. I mean, part of the Haley problem is there's so many ways you can build her and they're all good. But like, Ghost Fleet is... I'm pretty okay with happy with Ghost Fleet into Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm.
But Ghost Fleet into Storm Division Haley 2 or so the Tempest Haley 2 isn't going to work.
Yeah, that's
if it's Heavy Metal, I'll play the Ghost Fleet game.
Maybe so.
Like, I'll play the long recursion game against a low attack count Haley 2 army. But if it's a Haley 2 army that's designed to, like, stomp on all the infantry lists that are running around right now, and there are lots.
Mm.
So... you know, that's more of a problem.
Is there something to be found in Infernal Machines? Because that's recursion too, and people generally don't respect the recursion from the surgeons. But please put it on a table. I guarantee you, it's awesome.
Also, an ambushing unit of Mechanithralls seems really good against Haley's feet. She has to pick a side, right? And the scenarios are really wide. So you can play your Soul Hunters out wide because they've got threat ranges for days. You can aggressively contest with a load of Mechanithralls that are advanced deploying. And you get the ability to bring on an ambushing unit on whatever side she didn't commit to. There might be something there. Like, what caster, maybe?
That's a big question.
Gorshe 2, maybe? If you want to really do that Soul Hunter or threat range for days.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the big answer, because her feet is anyway far enough. I mean, a bit of a Haley player, let's say. Well, suppose she feeds and doesn't catch your Soul Hunters, then the chances that something is in front of your Soul Hunters that is really meaningful are quite small. I mean, one chance is, well, there's like a Firefly or whatever, you know, something that doesn't really matter a lot. And the other option is, there's a storm wall. I mean, it's fine, and really, you can put five Soul Hunters into an Arcane Shielded storm wall. It really doesn't care.
Well, it's, not Arcane Shielded because you're a Hexblast caster.
Okay.
Also, you got to consider that what models are relevant is very different because of the scenario pack. That Firefly, if it's sitting in a wide zone contesting something, then your Soul Hunter swinging around and killing it and scoring a zone is pushing Haley back on her win on scenario clock. And every turn you push her back,
you're getting closer to winning.
And then Gorshe 2 also has the ability to feed back a bunch of models, which is really strong against not just Haley 2, but a lot of other Signar who are relying on big feet. Like, in so many ways, Gorshe 2's feet is just counter feet. It's just, all that work you did, fuck that, let's start again.
But he misses something very important, I think, and that is Ghostwalk. Or that is a way for Mechanic Trolls to
get run. Pathfinder. That is a big issue. I mean, even Soul Hunters don't have Pathfinder.
Yes. I tried some Infernal Machines, and I tried to recycle Mechanic Trolls into Vile Trolls, and recycle Vile Trolls back into Mechanic Trolls, and then recycle some of the Stitch Trolls into whatever the fuck you need at that point. It's awesome. It's really, really cool to just adapt whatever you put on the table based on what you need right there. But you need Ghostwalk. You need a way to get across the table.
The objective's not good enough.
There's too much terrain on the table these days.
I cannot argue with that.
And the problem is, then, if you're talking, I need a Ghostwalk caster, you come back to the Negra, the Coven, and I think Agathia?
Yeah.
Is that all of it, or am I missing someone?
That's it.
Really it, right? So, we're talking Infernal Machines, which is a team force that doesn't have any enemy stat finding, not moving cool anyway. So, you really just need something to fix that. Then, right out of the three, the Negra, Coven, or Agathia, I think they're Coven is the best choice.
Well, what about the Negra?
They can just decide, don't fuck you, you're not going to shoot me for one turn. And that is huge. Because you can dictate the pace of the game, you can force the moment when Haley 2 has to feed. Because she almost always has to counter feed. Because if she doesn't, she's going to be fucked. And that is important. I mean, you can decide when Haley 2 feeds. That's important. That's big. Huge.
What about Tenegra in that Infernal Machines list? Into Haley 2.
Just bought a sea of Mechanic Throws to make a high value attack wasted.
And maybe, like, you know, you got some Soul Hunters to push a threat range to try and force an early feat. And then as many Mechanic Throws as you can fit in around those Soul Hunters.
Mm. Yeah, but, you know, if you have a.
You've got access to Ghostwalk. And you've got a feat that you can hold on to.
Yeah.
Of course, but. If you have an able Haley 2 player, he's just going to kill your Soul Hunters because they're not going to be occultated. He's going to see them. I mean, if they want to be relevant, he's going to see them. He's going to kill them. And then there you are, right? Which is shitloads of Mechanic Trolls that casually die to whatever the fuck your opponent is throwing out. I mean, they just die in droves to Electro Leaps and whatever.
Okay, let's turn some of those Mechanic Trolls into Brute Trolls then. Do the Soul Hunters survive there?
Yeah. Because you can always take the Brute under a Wraith Engine to shield guard the Storm Striders. They can shield guard the shots, and then you make sure the Mech Thralls are closer to the Brute Thralls and the Soul Hunter. So then basically once the Brute take the shield guard shot, and then the Elites go through the Mech Thralls, then you basically pretty much guarantee the, obviously not literally guarantee, but you can make it awkward in terms of Haley having to TK Soul Hunters and all sorts of shit like that.
You're going to have to make the Haley player use their tools, which is a win.
Yeah, oh no.
Yeah, the thing is, I like what you're saying, but a Coven would actually do this better.
Yeah, probably.
But I want to play Coven in Dark Host class.
Sure.
Stop making me... I know. This is the thing, though. It's like, anything you put the Negra or Coven with is going to be good. It's actually figuring out where the best casters land. But
you can also, I mean, if you want to play Coven and Dark Host, I mean, you were the one talking about playing the Negra and the Dark Host. Why don't you do
this
that?
Is true.
Just play
the Negra
and Dark Host and play the Coven and Infernal Machine. And then just have great, and I swear you, it's great enjoyment to work the necrosurgeons and change around all the kinds of trolls that you're putting back on the table.
Yeah, ever since the change let them bring back Biles, I have been wanting to do it. That seems amazing.
It is. It's really a lot of fun.
Also, with all the infantry that are showing up now, Biles are incredible.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I mean, they're not as dominant as they used to be, but for example, Biles are great against, well, Trenchards and Helix 3.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're great against Iron Fangs.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah,
Iron Fangs, let's be fair, they're not really a threat here.
Not terribly. I mean, if you've got Venom, Iron Fangs aren't a big problem.
No, I mean, yeah. It's not even Venom. It's Curse of Shadows and Cavalry.
Curse of Shadows and Cavalry is my favorite thing. And it's so rare you get to really leverage it.
Oh, I...
Because the table state never quite lines up just right.
My game yesterday, I totally lived the dream on a unit of Legion Swordsmen, or I have no idea. You know, these dudes with Legion...
Some Legion punks.
Yeah, some Legion punks. Anyway, you know, the infantry that nobody ever uses. I did it actually twice because it's a Coven. So on one flank, there's the Shadows... Put my Bane Riders through your unit. On the other flank, Curse of Shadows, put my Bane Riders through your unit. That's fucking delightful.
That is delightful.
It is. It is. So yeah. I mean, Iron Fangs are not an issue.
No, not terribly.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I feel like the answer, not the answer, like I'm under no illusions that we're ever going to build a list that is going to, like, dominate Haley. That's not going to happen. But I feel like something clever that gives us a little dark horse edge into that matchup is, like, right at my fingertips, and I can't find it. But I feel like it's right there, and it's driving me crazy.
I would really suggest the Infernal Machines.
Infernal Machines.
With a Coven.
I might give that a go, then. I might get on to Mr. Porter and see if he's got the extra models I need to make it happen. So what would you suggest with that? Double Soul Hunters, Mechanothralls, Biles?
I would actually play Single Soul Hunter.
That's probably right.
I have a list somewhere, but I think it has Wraith Engine as well, because, well, you're going to be shot at.
True, and you do want that counter Haley scenario thing that the Wraith Engine does is quite important.
And you want the Dark Shroud. Don't forget, there's no Banes in this list.
Don't forget,
Four Armor Swing, else it's not a good list. So you want the Dark Shroud, you're gonna get shot at. So there's a lot of reasons to put in the Wraith Engine. So I have one unit of Soul Hunters, I have a Wraith Engine, I have, a unit of Mechanitrolls with all the trimming. Like, all the trimmings.
Yeah, all the brutes, advanced deploying.
Yes, and then a unit of Mechanitrolls, just 10. Nothing else. And I put two brutes in the unit with all the trimmings, and one brute in the ambush unit. Because I could. And then you'll have some free solos, but...
Yeah. Which is what? Your free solos are what? Surgeon, Pistol Wraith?
I think so.
Because, you know... We ragged on the Pistol Wraith in our last episode a little bit, but this scenario packet makes me love Pistol Wraiths.
Yeah, and the thing is, in this specific list, you really need it as a scenario piece, I guess. It's just generally fucking annoying, and if you really just need something to die, and also, it brings one or two shots that your opponent has to take into account. I think if you let Pistol Wraith unload on Junior, chances are he's just gonna take him down.
I mean, I can't remember the last time I got to have a Pistol Wraith that loaded up on souls go to 10. It doesn't happen because they have such a huge red light alarm over their head.
Yeah, I don't know if he really needs to load up on souls though. I mean,
I know, I just really want to do it.
The power 12. So, if the But in the junior isn't camping two. An average is, I mean, assuming that the vehicle weight doesn't hit, he's gonna die. I mean, you got a good chance to just put him in the dirt. Right? Or am I just totally spacing on this?
No, I'm coming around on pistol rates, especially when they're free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on that bombshell, it is time to end. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I was Vlad.
I was Anthony.
Thanks, Potter.
And I was Ryan. Good night.